There's so much misinformation out there. You overpronate and you might need a stability shoe. If anyone's ever told you running's bad for your knees, slap them.
No offense to all the runners out there, but you're all pretty challenged.
Physical bent. Post run beer is one of the best beers you'll ever have.
You never feel shit after a run.
You'll get fit, you'll get strong, you'll get healthy.
Running is fucking awesome. Hi Mike, I'm Dutch. I work as a massage therapist.
My name's Pat. I'm a running coach, physio. I'm an avid runner myself. We thought we'd call the podcast That's Running.
All right, guys. Welcome back to another episode of That's Running. We have jumped on a Zoom call with the UK today. It's sort of quarter past seven there. And we are talking to Andy from Precision Hydration. Thanks for coming on, Andy.
Hi guys, good to get the invite. Thank you.
That's all right. Did we invite you, or did you invite yourself?
Well, it was a bit of both. I think we were trying to figure that out. We got a great guy in your local area in Sydney called Shano, and he was definitely making some noise about this. So I think Chris from our team reached out to you guys because someone in the office listens to your podcast. So there's all sorts of interconnection, but. Glad to be able to chat with you.
I'm not afraid of a bit of incest. That's fine.
Yeah, that's good.
So Andy, your company, your business is called Precision Hydration. Tell us what it is in 20 seconds.
Well, basically what we do is we try to work out individual hydration needs for athletes, because when I was competing as an athlete myself, it was my Achilles heel. It was the thing that stopped me from performing at my best, especially when it got hot, and everyone sweats differently. So we have a sweat test, and we have a range of different strength hydration products that aim to meet individual needs.
Very good. So good.
That's perfect. So your background as an athlete, where do you come from?
Mainly triathlon was what I spent most of my time, you know, doing seriously. I was probably more of a runner before I got into that. So I ran cross country at school, and through my triathlon career, running was always my strongest discipline. And then actually after triathlon, I trained up to run a couple of marathons and done a couple of ultras and things like that. So I've always had a leaning towards running, but the thing I spent the most time trying to be good at was Ironman.
Right.
For some reason, probably who knows why we do these things, but we do for whatever reason. They drag you in, don't they? And I got really, you know, got really, really into Ironman for quite a few years, and obviously wanted to go to Kona, which is what everyone who does Ironman wants to do. I managed to get there, and that was one of the big disappointments for me, was then not being able to perform, you know, at my best in Kona and in other hot places, despite having done a ton of training and got really ready for it. So yeah, that was going back, you know, 15 years ago or so, when I was smashing along seriously at that.
So what happened when you got to Kona? What went wrong?
I've always known I had a high sweat rate. So I would always presume that I needed to drink a lot as an athlete, because you could see the sweat pouring off me. You know, I would always sweat more than most of the blokes around me. But then I think what was happening was I didn't understand about the electrolyte losses in sweat. So I would drink a lot in races. I would actually drink loads some of the time to combat what I was losing in sweat and try to prevent dehydration. But actually I found that I was diluting the electrolytes in my body quite severely. And I was basically suffering with a condition called hypernatremia quite often, which is where you dilute the salt levels in your body. And it's a lot of people suggest that that's purely from over drinking, and over drinking is a big part of it. But also in my case, I lose a lot of salt in my sweat. So it was a combination of like losing a lot of salt, drinking a lot of water or a lot of sports drinks, which were very weak in terms of their electrolyte content. And what happens is over time, over many hours, it dilutes your body down, dilutes your blood sodium levels down, and it can make you feel really, really awful. So I would suffer a lot of cramping. I would suffer a lot of lethargy and kind of fatigue. I'd feel really bloated and just basically feel horrible, but not in the same way that you do when you run out of energy or something like that. It was just a kind of horrid decline, and it would take me days to get over races. Like, wait, I know that an Ironman will probably take most people several days to fully recover from, but I would actually feel quite ill afterwards. And it was in investigating why all of that was happening that I started to understand the physiology of sweating a bit more, started to work with a doctor who was a good friend of mine. And he was very helpful in suggesting that, you know, talking to me about sweat composition and the fact that he could see I was losing tons of salt on my kit and clothing. And he said, look, we should test your sweat because that's the thing you can do. We can measure the electrolyte concentrations and then we should look at what you're taking in. And basically he found that there's this massive gap between the two. And what was good was then when we managed to correct that. So, but you know, the sort of short version of the long story is that I started taking a lot more salt in these long hot races, like probably 3 or 4, maybe 5 times more than I was taking. Right. And all of a sudden it was like night and day. I was just, yeah, right. I was able to get through them. The cramping was gone. I was feeling great. And, you know, feeling more like I was able to sort of punch along at the pace that I was fit enough to do, as opposed to being hampered by something. So it was a huge, you know, for me as an athlete, and because I was someone who'd really, like a lot of us do, I'd thrown myself into sport. You know, there was no half measures. I was going at this as hard as I could. And when you come up against an intractable problem like that at first, it's pretty soul destroying. So when I kind of solved it for me, it was genuinely a bit of a sort of light bulb moment. And that was what led me to then start looking at sweat testing and saying, well, maybe this should be available to more athletes. And that was the thing that was the genesis of Precision Hydration, which started nearly 10 years ago now.
Yeah. Okay. That's an incredible story. It's cool to have come full circle. I want to ask, have you gone back to Kona? Have you like faced those demons?
No, I've not actually. And I think I don't know if I will or won't. In some ways I'd like to. I think about it every so often. I mean, my life is very different now with running a small business. You know, we've got 10 people working at PH these days. I've got 2 small children, 3 and 6 years old. So at the moment is not the right time to suddenly fire up the old tri bike and start doing 15 hours training a week. I mean, I keep fit and I swim and I bike and I run a bit, but I think if I do, it'll be later on, and hopefully in a positive way. I actually feel now like it would have been great to go there and do my best, and obviously that's what I wanted to do. And at the time, I was gutted that I didn't do very well. But the further away you get from it, and you realise that actually the things I learned there have allowed me to start a business and do other things. I think I'm able to reflect on it in a more positive light because you sort of have something tough happens, you learn from it and adapt as a result of it, and you end up better off. So,
I was going to say that experience of being disappointed at Kona has shaped your life, hasn't it? Like, look at you now.
Yeah.
You've got a business, you've got employees, and you've traveled to Australia earlier this year to try and spread your business into Australia. And like, you know, if you had succeeded at Kona, maybe this wouldn't have happened. Kind of funny how that all worked out, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think, you know, that I'm sure that happens with a lot of people who are, you know, entrepreneurs in some way. I mean, I never set out to think I didn't want to be an entrepreneur or something. I just wanted to, you know, it was just a problem that looked like it needed solving. And I think that's how a lot of these decent innovations start, is, you know, you find something genuinely useful, then you kind of take it out to the world and see if other people have the same issue.
Yeah. I've got 2 questions. I want you to define dehydration, and I want you to define hyponatremia, please, for those listening at home. What's the difference?
So if you want to be pedantic about dehydration, dehydration is the process of losing water in the body. So it's actually a process rather than a state. The thing that most people, colloquially, we use dehydration to describe like low body water, which is actually, if I, again, being pedantic, is hypohydration. But I think in most people's terminology, dehydration is when you're low on body water or becoming low on body water. And it's kind of a difficult thing to measure because we carry a lot of water inside the body's cells. That's where most of our water is, actually, in the intracellular compartment. We carry the rest of it extracellularly, so that's in the bloodstream, and it's in the interstitial fluid and around the muscles and things. And when we get low, you can, for instance, be dehydrated in one compartment of the body and not the other for a transient period of time. But generally, it's basically, you know, kind of low water levels. There's no magic threshold of what determines normal and low. It's been people say, you know, less than 2% below your normal baseline body weight suggests you're dehydrated. But it's a bit more complicated than that. But essentially, it's low body water. And hyponatremia, so hypo with a PO, not hype, as opposed to hyper, is low blood sodium levels. So when your blood is normally very salty, it contains about 3,600 milligrams of sodium for every liter. So that's why if you've ever cut your lip and you lick it, the first thing you taste often is salt, because it's the blood mm-hmm. itself is very salty. And when we sweat, we lose some of that salt onto the skin. That's why you see it, because your sweat comes from your blood plasma. And if you then just drink and drink and drink a lot of plain water, what happens is you absorb that water into your bloodstream and the overall level of sodium in the blood is diluted. And blood sodium levels have to be controlled pretty tightly. They don't move very much at all, or ideally they don't. And when they drop below 135 millimoles per liter, then you're defined as hyponatremic. So you're low on your blood sodium concentration is low. And those two things, so dehydration normally results in the opposite, normally results in hypernatremia, because your blood becomes more concentrated. So you have less overall blood, but it's more concentrated because you sweat out more water. And with athletes, you can either become dehydrated and hypernatremic at the same time, because you can have lower blood volume and you can dilute the blood down if you're losing sufficient amounts of salt. Or you can be hypernatremic and overhydrated, meaning that you kind of just puffed up on loads of extra water.
Mm.
And so there's all sorts of different things. And I think when in my conditions, what I was often suffering was with the sort of dehydration and hypernatremia, because I was sweating so much, my net body water and salt losses were really high, and I was just putting water back in to a sufficient level to dilute me down, but not to rehydrate effectively. And that's what we've seen with a few athletes, you know, when we work with them in the field.
Mm. So when you're hyponatremic, so that means you've got, you know, your diluted sodium or electrolytes in your blood, in your body, then you were describing the symptoms of that, which was fatigue, cramping, this lethargy, this terrible feeling. So this will kind of go down two parts, is can you be hypernatremic, like can you just take on too much salt and sodium? But then I guess the solution is, and I know a lot of my friends and people, and I've been guilty in the past, is I don't want to be hyponatremic because I know I'm sweating, so I'll just eat like a whole bunch of salt tablets, and that way I'll make sure my salts are high. Can you overdo that? Is it bad? Is it safe?
Yeah, it's a great question, because athletes, we're all the same. You know, if we sort of want to take, if we think one of these things will be better, we'll probably take three or four just to be sure, you know, and then some people will take seven or eight, and it becomes like a arms race to the top, you know, of how much you can consume of everything. But like anything, you can take too much. When you take too much salt, what tends to happen is you feel really thirsty, because the level of salt in your blood is a big driver of your thirst response. So what tends to happen if you take too many salt tablets or drink too much or take too strong an electrolyte drink or something, you actually just get a dry mouth and feel thirsty. You'll crave water. And if you've not gone too far overboard, you'll probably just top yourself up with water and dilute it back down. If you take loads, especially if you take capsules or pills, you know, with salt in, then potentially you might make yourself feel a bit sick or even give yourself diarrhea if you really overdo it. But it's relatively, you don't want to do it on a regular basis. I wouldn't encourage anyone to say, just take as much as you can. That's a ridiculous thing to do. But taking a little bit more than you need in a long, hot race is probably less detrimental than not taking enough and becoming depleted. And I would say that that's where what we're always looking for, though, is like the Goldilocks amount. There's always an amount that is just right for you. And for me, that happens to be quite a high amount. For other people, it happens to be low. And that's a big part of what we do, is trying to guide people away from the extremes. Because the argument often goes that you'll have people that say, you should take, like, I took this amount of salt per hour, this works for me, this was fantastic. And then other people say, I've read this book that says you don't need to take any. And you end up with these really polarized arguments instead of people looking at it the difficult way, which is on an individual, nuanced way, and saying, this is the, about the amount that you as an individual need based on your sweat rate, your sweat sodium losses, the length of the race, the conditions, and then you kind of trial and error it from a more subtle starting point. And I think that's what we're always trying to bear in mind. You know, for to put the numbers in context, like in hot races, I've taken up to 1.5 grams of sodium per hour, 1500 milligrams, which is a lot. We see people that get by on 200 or 300 milligrams an hour, but somewhere in the middle, like 700-800 milligrams, is probably a good amount for the average person to start trying with if they've got no other information. Because this sort of distribution of sweat and salt losses is like a any normal distribution curve. You know, one of those curves that you see, a bell-shaped curve, it's called, where the majority of people are in the middle. It's like if we measured the height of the population. Most people are kind of somewhere in the middle. Let's say if it's guys that are around 5'9" or 176 centimeters or something, you see a few outliers that are in the NBA that are, you know, nearly 7 foot tall, and you've got a few little guys that are down at 4 foot something, but the most people are in the middle. And most people lose like a moderate amount of salt and sweat, and so a moderate amount of replacement's good. You just got to be careful you're not one of the people on the outlying side who are then taking the complete opposite amount to what you need. That makes sense.
So your whole setup is designed to understand where you are on that bell curve. Do you lose a lot? Do you lose a little bit? And then formulate like a plan to suit that, like with literally like precision. So, is precision hydration, is that only for the people who do suffer that lethargy, those cramps, those issues? Is it for everyone? Like, what do you like? I'm sure you're going to say it to everyone. I'm sure you are. Give you mad.
No, to be honest, I wouldn't, Pat. I think that if you are suffering, basically, we have the biggest impact with people who are either suffering in hot conditions or, you know, sweating a lot, or basically people who know that they're on or suspect they're on the higher end of sweat and sodium losses. Because if you can get away with a relatively moderate intake of electrolytes, there's quite a few products out there that people routinely use. And you kind of, a big thing to look at to begin with is go back into your history and say, look, have I typically performed as well as I'd expect to in hot conditions compared with cold conditions? Because if there's a big discrepancy, then your sweat and hydration might be a place to go looking for answers. Yeah. I would also say that for a lot of athletes that are more novice, that or athletes that are going from short distance races to long distance races, or athletes that are going from habitually cold climates to compete or race and train in hot climates, then what we do in terms of the sweat testing and the education can be very valuable. Because the normal way of learning things as an athlete is you go and try it goes right or wrong, and you learn from that, you know. Whereas if you're someone who's been running 10Ks and half marathons and you've entered an ultra, then having a sweat test, learning about your hydration, potential hydration needs and all that as part of that process of stepping up could be a massive time and effort and sort of heartache saver later on, because we can shortcut the process. So I would say, I wouldn't say it's not necessary for everyone, but if you're doing longer, hotter races, if you've got a history of struggling, or if you've not got the experience yet to know whether you're going to struggle or not, then I think, you know, if you want to learn about this preemptively, then what we offer in terms of education and potentially products is quite interesting. But we see ourselves as pretty, you know, as niche in that respect. The niche is really wide when you multiply it over the world. There's a lot of people who do sport, and a lot of people suffer when it's hot. So, a lot of the sports drink market has gone down the route of they sell it in petrol stations and in supermarkets. And, you know, it's all just kind of sold to anyone who wants it on the basis it's a miracle performance drink. When actually we know the reality is it's a miracle if you need it, but for the vast majority of people, they don't.
Yeah, cool. So on what you just said, what does a sweat test you guys do look like?
We use a piece of technology that was originally used in the diagnosis of a condition called cystic fibrosis. And we put some electrodes on your arm, we stimulate the sweat glands, and then we take a sweat sample at rest and run it through an analyzer. And that gives us an idea of the concentration of sodium in your sweat. And if we take, you know, 8 or 10 measurements, we only usually take one. But if we take 8 or 10 measurements from someone, we typically see very little variance in that number. So although your rate at which you sweat varies a lot depending on the conditions and your genetics, the sodium concentration of your sweat tends to be pretty individual to you and pretty stable. So we kind of measure that static factor. We can then help you with understanding how to measure your sweat rate by weighing yourself before and after some training sessions or some races. And then you've got a really good picture of whether you're where you sit on that bell curve for sweat and sodium loss. And from there, it's then a case of ballparking where you start for some trial and error, you know, volume of fluid, amount of salt, and then tailoring it in from that point. It's kind of, you know, like strategic, organized trial and error, but without taking in account the whole width of possibilities. We try and get you in a zone. If you compared it to clothing, what we're trying to do is just, with the testing, establish whether you're likely to be in a small, a medium, a large, or an extra large, rather than just kind of walking in and having no knowledge and just picking something off the rack. It's just getting you in the right zone.
It's really interesting. I tried precision hydration on my last long run. And if I go back to my second last long run, I attempted a 100-kilometer run and I pulled out at 55 kilometers, partly because I wasn't that motivated, but the main reason was because I was cramping. I was cramping for like probably 3 kilometers leading up to a checkpoint. I drank my cramp fix little thing. Gave me mild relief for a couple of minutes, and then the cramps came back. And so I ended up pulling out of 55K largely because of the cramps. Then on the weekend just gone, like 8 days ago, I did a 60-kilometer trail run. But I actually used my precision hydration, and I did the online test. So this is like, I guess, your non-scientific but semi-validated version on the website, where you answer like 12 questions, and it gives you a vague kind of sweat rate. But what it does is it gives you a hydration plan based off that. So I did this long 60-kilometer run in the bush, and I went off my hydration plan that I got from Precision. And I was skipping along. I had no cramps, no issues, and I finished strong. And I finished knowing that it was like, cool, if I mentally had the capacity for it, and if I had a bit more carbohydrates, I'd be able to keep going for a few more hours. So that's very much just a one example. That's an N=1 study. But it's really interesting for me to have used Precision and felt amazing on that run. Whereas my last run before that, I felt like dog shit. That was just the brief sweat test that you just have on your website. And I did it, took like 3 minutes, and then gave me my hydration plan. I stuck to that hydration plan and it came up good. Yeah, so it's something because listening to the way you talk about it, I'm like, fuck, I'm just hearing lots of science and I don't understand that, and it's a bit hard and whatever, I don't really care. But like, there is lots of science, but it's actually like really straightforward. You get a plan and then you just do the plan, and it's not that hard. It's like, drink the strong stuff before your run, then during the run drink the not so strong stuff, and then maybe have that after your run. And like, it's pretty easy. It's really cool.
Well, that's always the challenge as well, because some people do, and you're right, there is sort of like science behind all of this, but ultimately it's quite simple. It's an amount of fluid and salt, or fluid and sodium, you know, a ratio of that is close to what you're losing or close to what your individual body needs. And we estimate that based on answers to the questions that you put in there. And ultimately, you're right, it's like boiling it down to a simple thing, that because some athletes and the majority of athletes just want to know, okay, what do I want to drink before I go, you know, start, and what am I going to drink during, and then if I'm recovering, what do I drink after? And that's what we try and do, is try and distill it down into the simplest terms, but also for those who are interested, trying to be transparent about the science and the rationale behind that, because the sports industry in general, especially the nutrition and hydration side of the industry, is like riddled with all sorts of nonsense and it gets really confusing. So we try as best we can to cut through that where we can. I mean, you guys know that because you're in that world, and the amount of claims that manufacturers make about shoes and about performance products. And
everything.
Kind of thing. It's just like, yeah.
That's why we started the podcast, because it's just bullshit.
There's so much shit out there, and like, nah. The stuff that you guys, like, what Precision, like, has in the market is a lot stronger than your average supermarket stuff.
Yeah, so we basically have three main strengths of product. We have a 500 milligrams per liter drink, which is like our standard one, if you like. That's the that's a moderate strength electrolyte drink. It's similar to most of the ones you'd pick up in a supermarket or whatever. You know, the classic like Lucozade, Powerade, Gatorade, whatever. They're all about that kind of strength. We do one at 500. We do one at 1,000 milligrams, which is sort of double that strength. And that's one of the most popular ones we do because that hits right in the middle of the bell curve. Because most, if you take 1,000 people, the average sweat sodium reading you're going to get is somewhere between 900 and 1,000 milligrams per liter. And then for the heavy sweaters and for the guys like me, the crampers, that sort of thing, we've got the 1,500, which is like three times as strong. And it's more like, I think in Australia, you have, it's not Pedialyte, it's something that's called, what's your hydration, Hydralyte, that kind
Hydralyte.
Of. Yeah. That is the sort of, that more, that medical strength rehydration. And the 1500 is actually even a little bit stronger than that, I think. And we formulated that at that strength because we did quite a bit of testing and found that that's about as strong as you can reliably go without giving people with almost everyone not having any GI issues with it. Yeah. Because if you go really strong, like some drinks, some people will go stronger than that with their own mixes, but you've got to know your body and you've got to know that you can absorb it. Because if you go super strong, then you quite often end up feeling a bit sicky or whatever, which kind of defeats the object. Because what you're trying to do is take this to make yourself perform better, not feel nauseated.
Yeah, absolutely. And because I tried it, I did my own triathlon yesterday because I had time and it was like, there's no races on, I'm just going to do my own triathlon.
Yeah.
And that's when I used it. I came first. I'm the podium, so good. And I was surprised, like, because I've had some very different electrolytes throughout my sort of running career, and it tastes very nice. I've had some really offensive tasting ones where I've gone, whoa, that's too much.
Yeah.
And I've had some of them like, oh, is there anything in this? But I really enjoy the taste of it. It makes it sort of easy to drink. And I was on the bike and was like, oh, I'm going to just have some more. It just made me drink on a more regular basis. Because
there's
it wasn't something I was...
This, yeah.
Like, sorry, normally sorry, I'm like, oh, I have to take this on because I have to. But this was very much like, it's actually quite nice.
You can drink all day.
Yeah, there's a lot of research about drink palatability and flavor, and it's suggesting the obvious that basically if you have a drink that tastes good, people tend to drink more of it without thinking about it. And we spend...
I have that problem with beer a lot.
Yeah, the colder it is and the hotter the weather is, the more beer you drink. It's just, you know, one of those quirks of physiology.
That's science.
Right. Science at work. When we were formulating the flavor, what we decided was we were going to make it as bad as possible, the conditions as bad as possible, to see if we still like the drink. So at first we obviously started drinking them with nicely like filtered water, nice and cold, narrowing the flavor options down. And then we got to the point where you sat on a bike in a heat chamber and you've had the mix in your drink bottle in there for 45 minutes. So it's like tepid temperature. And then it had to pass the test that you could still drink it in those conditions. And what we basically found was that the more we dialed the flavor down, the more subtle we made it, the better it got to a certain point. So that's why a lot of people do comment on the flavor of the products and say, you know, they are very nice, because I think it's just because the flavor is very minimal. And in an ultra or in an Ironman or something, you might drink quite a few liters of this stuff, so it has to be fairly bland, really. But just enough sweetness and just enough saltiness to tell your body it's getting what it needs. But then nothing more overpowering.
Yeah, I think so. And that I was able to drink it all day. One thing I wanted to ask is, I'm sure you're familiar with Tailwind. I've been drinking Tailwind. Pardon me. I've been having Tailwind for years. with like yeah. what I would call, you know, good success and results. And I quite like it. I like, because my thing is just like ultra marathons, and I like yeah. that, you know, between that and a couple of gels, you know you're getting most things that you need. So how does it compare to Tailwind? Because that's pretty well entrenched in the market here.
Yeah, Tailwind has done a great job in trail running, and they've gone down the line of sort of the all-in-one solution. So their drink mm. contains a lot more calories, basically. That's the fundamental difference. Their drink is isotonic, bordering on hypertonic. So that means it's sort of osmolality is the same, or maybe even a bit thicker than your blood, and it delivers a lot of calories. So if you just you know want an all-in-one solution, which work at sometimes, you know, you don't need to eat so much alongside that. The drinks that yeah. we make are hypotonic, so they're very low osmolality. They contain a lot less calories. We do one with 0 calories, which is the tablets, and we do one with about 15 grams of carb per serving, which is the powdered drinks. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that you supplement both of those with calories from gels or bars or whatever else you're eating. And the reason we do that is because when conditions vary, I tend to find that for a lot of athletes, cooler conditions favor an all-in-one drink, you know, which has a lot of calories in it, because mm-hmm. you drink enough and you get a lot of calories. When it gets hot though, you might want to drink double or triple what you want to drink on a cold day or a cooler day. And all of a sudden, if you're using like a Tailwind type isotonic hypertonic drink, you're going to get 2 or 3 times the calories if you drink 2 or 3 times as much. And that can lead to GI issues and that kind of thing. And that's what we typically see in longer and hotter events. So I think hypotonic drinks are the one when hydration is the priority. So like any time when you're sweating a lot, especially in the heat, and then you can dial up or dial down the amount of calories you take alongside that. And I've always been an advocate for separating those things. I'll share a blog with you guys actually that we wrote about that recently, which we call it the 3 levers. And you've got, when you're exercising, you need calories, usually in the form of carbohydrate. You need fluid, usually in the form of water. And you might need salts as well, depending on the conditions and how much you're mm-hmm. sweating. And those 3 things are like 3 independent levers that you want to pull differently based on the conditions and based on your physiology. Yeah. So the carbohydrate one might be fairly static. For me, it's in the region of like 60-ish grams, 60, 70 grams of carbs an hour. That seems to be a good sweet spot for me. A bit more if I'm going a bit, you know, harder, and a bit less if I'm going on steadier, but I'm in that zone. Fluid and salt though goes up and down massively depending on the conditions and what clothing you're wearing, what, you know, there's loads of variables. And basically, as an athlete, if you're doing long stuff, if you can understand what your unique mixture of those 3 things is on a given day, most of the rest of the sports nutrition stuff is noise. You know, if you get those 3 things yeah. right, you're going to have a good day, you know, if you pace it right. So that's why I like the idea of keeping the fluids and salts a bit more separate than having it all in one drink mix. Cause all of a sudden you get super thirsty on a day when you're carrying just a massive bladder full of tailwind on your back, and you're going to drink loads more, but sooner or later you're going to hit a ceiling when you suddenly don't need 120 grams of carbs an hour. You know, you're going to start to feel sick. So I think it's just that flexibility that I prefer with having them all separated.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. All right. That was, I've learned a lot in that last 2 minutes.
Yeah,
really cool the way you just just kind of, I suppose, put that into words. That was cool.
Yeah, we're keen to get that blog and have a, like, definitely for our listeners as well, to have a read through that.
Yeah.
And you work with a fair few athletes at a high level as well, correct?
Yeah, we've been, so when we started out, the people that were most interested in what we did were professional sports teams and professional athletes. And we've always maintained quite a big foot in the door with that work. So we work with a lot of American pro sports teams in mm-hmm. basketball and baseball and American football. The last 2-3 years, we've been working with pro cyclists, particularly Team Sunweb, who are riding in the Tour de France next week, and helping there. They've got full-time dietitians and nutritionists, and we work with them on individual plans for some of the riders, because they've got 1 or 2 riders who've got very, very high sweat and salt losses. So we've been working on ways not only to sort of like strategically figure out what they might need, but also tactically figure out how you deliver that to them in a bike race, which is a really interesting scenario, because normally in a bike race, someone goes back to the team car, hands out a load of bottles. It's impossible to individualize them. So we've been figuring out ways to get individual needs met in the peloton, which has been quite interesting. And then outside of that, we consult with a lot of triathletes, marathon runners, ultra runners, and that sort of thing, you know, on a one-to-one basis, and spend a lot of time trying to get them to go through the process of like accurate data collection on what they eat and drink during races, comparing it to performance, a lot of iteration. People quite often, if they're having a problem, they'll come to us to talk to us about their nutrition and hydration issues. And often the initial assumption is that we'll uncover some kind of magic bullet that will just get them on the right track. And, you know, it's nine out of 10 times it's not like that. It's like we go through you have to coach them to go through a bit of a painful process of examination and iteration to work towards, you know, figuring out where things are going wrong. But if you're persistent with it, you can often get there.
Cool. Look, I think to wrap it up there is, what sort of the top three tips you would have for people that are struggling with their hydration?
I would say the first one is start to record what you're eating and drinking, and start to analyze it for those three lever things. You know, how much carbohydrate you're taking per hour, how much fluid in milliliters or ounces you're taking per hour, and how many milligrams of sodium. And then start to compare that to some of the information that's in our blog that we've got on our website, which tells you about what's normal in those ranges. Because if you get those, as I said before, if you get those three things about right, then most of the time that's where the magic is. It's actually in just getting the mixture right. But doing things like, so that would be the first tip, is like understand how much you're consuming per hour, so that you've got a baseline for what's either working or not working for you at the moment. Then I would say do things like, we've got another blog, how to measure your sweat rate, which is cheap and easy to do. You can download a spreadsheet from our website. You can weigh yourself before and after some runs, and you can start to compare your sweat loss to what's normal. You know, are you low? Do you have a low volume of sweat, a medium, a high, a very high? And that will then start to guide you on the hydration side of things as to what level of replenishment you need. And then the third thing I would say to do then is change one variable at a time when you go out and do either races or long, hard training sessions, and put things to the test and rigorously test it when you change that one thing and see what effect that has. Because what athletes always tend to do is they do something. If it doesn't work, and I was as guilty as anyone of this back when I was racing, you then sort of like throw your arms up and change five different things at once in the hope that something will make a difference. And maybe it does, or maybe it doesn't, but you'll never really know what made the difference if you don't attack it from a more strategic view. And I would say that would be the top three tips, is just like patiently and methodically work through those issues. And I would certainly put out to anyone listening that if they want a hand with that, that's what we're here for. So you can reach out to us. You can email us at hello@precisionhydration.com and ask questions. You go to our website, we've got WhatsApp. You can WhatsApp us quick questions. And we've even got video calls. So you can book a 20-minute video call with one of the team here in the UK and have a one-to-one chat. And if you bring your data and things like that to those sessions, it's always really useful. So I'll fire you the link for where people can book those. And they're totally free. There's no cost involved in any of that. You know, you just hit us up and we'll talk you through, and we'll be delighted to help if we can.
That's very generous.
Right. That's incredible. That's so good.
Yeah. You're going to get bombarded.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think we probably have to wrap up because you've got kids and I've got patients and we need to go and do some stuff.
Yeah.
But Andy, thank you for your time. It's really cool. It's really cool to hear how the work that you guys have been doing and how you're taking some really epic science and making it reasonably accessible to people. I've had a really positive experience using it, and I'm going to keep doing it. So I really appreciate that, and I love what you're doing in this space. It's really cool.
Good stuff. Well, we're hoping that we'll, you know, we would love to be doing more in your part of the world. So when when the world opens up again, we'll try and drop by and visit and get you sweat tested properly so that...
Yeah, cool. We'll be keen for that.
Yeah, awesome.
All right. Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
Good luck at Kona. Thanks, guys.